how do we actually create that connection? Because now it's not just the challenge of, oh, I don't have magic tricks. Now we're dealing with technology and people are staring at their screens. We're dealing with everybody focused so heavily on artificial intelligence instead of, you know, maybe creating and building those human connections.
Welcome to Your Intended Message, the perfect place for leaders and promising professionals who want to convey the intended message for greater success. Every week, we interview experts who address the challenges and best practices to deliver your message effectively. That might be one-to-one, one-to-few, or one-to-many. And perhaps the most important conversation, one to self. I'm your host, George Torok.
My guest today is Tim David. Here's three facts that I think you should know about him. One, he was listed as the 9th best motivational speaker in the world in a piece written by a CNN correspondent. Two, he's the author of several books, including Magic Words, The Science and Secrets Behind 7 Words That Motivate, Engage, and Influence. And three, for 8 years, he was a professional magician touring the country and performing up to 300 shows per year. Tim David, welcome to Your Intended Message.
Thanks, George. Great to be here. I see we both got the memo too. Red shirts, blue background. Let me just update here and make sure we get a little more similar. There we go. Now we're on the same page.
And glasses too. You got it. Yes, we've got to read those memos. Show up and we'll all wear the same. Tim, I'm curious. 8 years of performing as a magician, is what did you learn that was most helpful to make your acts more successful?
Well, I think the thing that magicians really focus on is the other person's perspective. And if you think about it, a magician is going to practice for hours in front of a mirror so that we can see what you see. We're going to video record ourselves. We're going to hire coaches to sit in different seats of the theater so that we know exactly what each audience member is experiencing. In fact, there's a phrase that magicians tell each other all the time when they're critiquing each other. And the phrase is, watch your angles. Watch your angles. And what that means is, hey, you might be doing great for the person right in front of you, but there's somebody sitting 5, you know, rows to the right, or, you know, 5 columns to the right. I don't know how it works in seating. And that would be it, not, you know, the illusion would be ruined for that person. So watch your angles is a great message. And really why I wanted to come on this podcast, right? Because the idea of your intended message, hitting your intended audience and making sure it has the effect that you hope for it to have, boom, that's the magic of communication. That's why I wrote this book. And that's a huge, huge lesson that I learned from magicians. And I was surprised that not everybody obsesses about other people's perspective the way that magicians obsess about other people's perspective. And when I learned that that was a rare trait, man, oh man, that's a drum that I want to bang. That's a flag I want to fly. And if you want to be heard and you want your message to be received, then hey, watch your angles.
Watch your angles. What a fabulous piece of advice that I've never heard before. And yet I see the wisdom in that, because we might be speaking to a room full of people. Perhaps we're at a meeting or at a speaking at a conference or the sales meeting. And we see one or two people up front who seem to be enjoying and rapt attention in what we're saying. And we ignore the people off to the side or the back because they're not as close to us. And we figure, hey, these people like me, therefore I'm okay.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. In fact, when I made my transition from magician to, you know, professional speaker, where now I am tasked with not, you know, I don't have these fancy, flashy illusions to grab people's attention. Now I have to rely on other techniques. And yes, of course, I do incorporate some magic into my presentations, not only to bring people in, but also to illustrate important messages, right? I think visual aids create powerful learning opportunities. But you're absolutely right. In fact, one of my speaking coaches said to me, I need you to pretend that half of your audience is blind and half of your audience is deaf. That way you can cater your audio and you can cater your visual messages and treat each one independently so that you can get your message across, even if one person in your audience is, again, not particularly visually a visual learner or not particularly an auditory learner. So again, just thinking about your different angles and thinking about different people in that audience and who your message really is intended for and how you want it to land, right? Absolutely factoring in all of those elements.
Why do people enjoy magic shows? Because they know it's not magic, yet they still enjoy it. What is it?
Well, I think the human brain has a natural capacity to want to close an open loop in their mind. So an open loop is something like a mystery, something like they don't know how the story is going to end, for example. And when we watch a movie, what keeps us watching until the end is that open loop of what's going to happen? How is this going to wrap up? I need some closure on this right here. And a magic trick doesn't give you that closure. It gives you this mystery to solve and this mystery to figure out. And I think the beauty is that it's not magic. And a lot of people will enjoy a magic show, not because, wow, it's magic, but because of the process of trying to figure it out. Hopefully, if the magician does their job correctly, it's also not just about the magic itself. It's really about the connection between performer and audience and creating a shared experience, which is one of the deepest and most powerful ways to create human connection quickly. Think shared experience, think shared laughter, and how quickly that can create connections between people. And I'll tell you what, George, you know, again, we're talking about getting your intended message across. We're talking about communication that lands. Listen, they will never hear your message and they will never accept your message until they accept the messenger. So that idea of creating a connection first, or as the book Compelling People, which is required reading at Harvard Business School. So those of you who are thinking this is a soft skill or not relevant for business, this is absolutely an important topic. That book says you've got to get inside someone's circle of listening. And if you don't do that, it doesn't matter what your message is. I don't care what your intention is behind the message. It's going to fall flat unless you land in that circle of listening.
Land inside their circle of listening. And you mentioned the word connection, about connecting. How can you apply, or how can we learn from what you've learned of making that connection when we're communicating with others and we don't have the magic tricks to make it mysterious and a shared experience?
Yeah, no, I think that's a big part of what I do now as a speaker. People ask me that all the time. And I've traveled all over this country, all over the world. I've spoken in 48 states, a bunch of countries around the world. And, you know, now writing books and, you know, speaking, like I said, on podcasts like this. And that question comes up often. How do we actually create that connection? Because now it's not just the challenge of, oh, I don't have magic tricks. Now we're dealing with technology and people are staring at their screens. We're dealing with everybody focused so heavily on artificial intelligence instead of, you know, maybe creating and building those human connections. So there's a lot of fragmentation. There's a lot of distraction. Creating connection is actually going to be the secret sauce, I think, for a lot of people and a lot of businesses moving forward, because we crave it as human beings. It's one of our deepest, most important needs, not wants, but needs as human beings, is to feel a sense of connection. Because, you know, again, evolutionarily speaking, if we're not connected to the tribe, it's really a survival question, right? At that point, if we are ostracized and sent out on our own, that's a scary thing. So the idea of connection and belonging and feeling connected to other human beings, so deep and so powerful. So how do we do that? I teach these three-step framework. It's really habits that have to be developed, right? And obviously beyond the habit of just prioritizing human connection, when it matters and where it matters. And those three habits, I call them the circuit of human connection, that kind of create this loop that taps into this power source of human connection. And very simply, there are three words: see, be, speak. See, be, speak. The first, see, means to see the human in front of you as a human. Right? Don't look at that person in front of you as your next sale. Don't look at that person in front of you as a means to an end. That person is a human being, and you want to acknowledge the humanity of the person in front of you. Now, as I just mentioned, people will never accept a message until they accept the messenger. That's why we have to be a human. In fact, many times we try to be professional when what we really need to be is personal and personable. So creating that human connection just has to do with being present in the moment with the person, being authentic, being yourself, being vulnerable. And those types of traits will allow people to accept the messenger so that they can accept your message. In fact, in my second book, The Four Levels of Influencing People, we talked about an interesting human brain trait where if someone has the resume or the clout or their reputation precedes them a little bit, like they can basically walk the talk and they can back it up. If that's the case, some intentional or even accidental mistakes in how they communicate, mistakes in really, it can be anything, showing up a little bit late. It can be, I've seen speakers who have literally stumbled and fallen off of a stage. And it looks like it's going to destroy their credibility because they look like a bumbling, fumbling fool. But what it actually does is it enhances that human-to-human connection. That person becomes relatable. That person becomes connectable. And that's what the B in CB speak stands for, is being that human, being someone who is connectable so that your message can be received. If you're speaking, if you're presenting, don't be a sage from the stage, be a guide from the side. And that, you know, level playing field, that connectable positioning is crucial in our CB speak model. And then the third piece, of course, is speak, right? We have to see the human, we have to be a human, and we also have to speak human. We have to speak language in a way that connects with the brains of the people around us. And that's really what my book, Magic Words, was about. This year, it's its 10th anniversary. And it just looked at some of the words that we say and how they genuinely are impacting the human brain in ways that we may not even expect. Because you see, the part of the brain that does the speaking is a separate part of the brain physiologically that does the listening. Again, I love the title of this podcast, Your Intended Message. So often we speak in such a way where we intend, because of the part of the brain that's doing the speaking, it makes total sense and we say a thing, but the part of the brain that does the listening is different and interprets it in not the way that we intended. And my favorite example is one time I was on an airplane and the captain came over the loudspeaker and he said, "Hey, ladies and gentlemen, this is your captain speaking. I just want to let you know there is absolutely no cause for concern." And that was it. Like, the intended message was no cause for concern. The speaking brain thinks that makes total sense. Don't be concerned. But obviously, if you unpack that and put yourself in my situation in that moment, I'm thinking, why? Why should I be concerned? Are the wings on fire? What was that sound? And for the rest of the flight, I'm concerned, right? Another example is, do not think of the word rhinoceros for the next 10 seconds. You can't do it, right? So very, very interesting little moments in language that I found from just the course of researching and writing. Tiny words, again, that you wouldn't suspect might have that sort of magical effect on the human brain, that it just defies logic. There's a mystery behind it. And when we understand that and unpack it, our message can be received as we intended it and not by accident.
And there's no question that some words are more powerful than other words, both from a negative standpoint and a positive standpoint. Let's take a look at some of those positive words, some of those magic words that you talk about in your book.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting that you say that. You know, when the book first came out, the New York Times and the Today Show and Huffington Post and Psychology, like, they were all talking like, oh, new book comes out and says that this is the most powerful word in the English language, the most persuasive, the most influential. And I'll tell you, the word they were talking about was based on some research that had been done in the 1970s. I wasn't claiming this was anything news or newsworthy. But again, hey, you know, the book's published by Penguin Random House. They have a great team of promotion and PR team and everything. So they got the word out and, you know, people picked it up. So that word was something very innocuous, something that you wouldn't expect. The word is because. In fact, the rest of the words also innocuous, not words that you might expect. The seven words are yes, but, if, because, help, thanks, and a person's name. and a person's name. So those are the seven magic words. Once again, we say them every single day. Some of them are just two letters long. In fact, if might be one of my favorite magic words in terms of the science behind what's going on in the brain when we hear if. And but is another one, like the science that goes on in the brain behind the word but. And this is a simple one to explain. Simple tool. Listen, anything that comes after the word but is enhanced, and anything that comes before the word but is erased. All right. So, honey, I love you, but those jeans, you know, or whatever it may be. So again, understanding the idea that there is something called a butt enhancer and a butt eraser, and that they are not late night infomercial products, that these are scientific, you know, the proven effects that are going on inside the brain. And it will change, those who understand that effect will change how we communicate. So that, not so that we can manipulate and persuade, but rather so that we don't make these mistakes and not, you know, and get a message across that we didn't intend. How often have you had that situation, George, either yourself or your listeners? That's not what I meant. Oh no, I didn't mean it that way, right? And it's simple fixes, like take the part you want them to remember and put it after the word but, and take the part that you don't really want them to have so much emotional attachment to and put it before the word but. So if you say, hey, are you willing to donate to our cause? And they say, gosh, you know, I'd really love to, but I can't. Then your job is to flip that around and feed it back to them. Oh, you can't, but you'd really love to. Okay. And again, it's not going to make them pull out their money right away and start writing you million-dollar checks. But what it will do is change the emotional reaction and response to that situation, and just change the flavor of the experience for them, and be like, yeah, you know, I'd really love to. And maybe next time they'd be a little more likely. So I started with the word because, saying it's one of the most powerful. I moved through one of my favorites, if, and then I landed on the magic word. But we can talk about any of these seven. The truth is, this is a book and not a list because of those types of reasons. We explain what the strategy is, and there's plenty of different applications and uses and strategies, once again, for tapping into the scientific power of these words.
These words, Tim, do they affect us on a subconscious level, or do we actually consciously go, oh, he said, but. And I know that what comes after but is more important than what he said before.
That's a great question, George. You know, I think that the subconscious component of these words is certainly more powerful, just like the subconscious component of your brain is so much more powerful than the conscious component of your brain. Now, a great example is a person's name. Your name, as Dale Carnegie says, is the sweetest and most important sound in any language. And there's some fascinating research behind the cocktail party effect, which is when you're in a noisy room and you're talking to someone, let's say you're at a cocktail party, and then you hear your name off in the distance, and suddenly your brain commandeers your attention and turns your head, you know, like Scooby-Doo, and who's talking about me? I heard my name. Well, your brain heard everything else too, but it chose to bump your name up the chain of command, chose to bump that sound up the chain of attention so that you pay attention to that. Why? Because your whole life you have been taught when you hear your name, you respond, you turn, you look, someone's talking to you, right? So it is a very powerful effect that goes deep. Did you know there was an advertising campaign by Coca-Cola, and it was one of their most successful advertising campaigns. In fact, it was the only campaign that was profitable in about an 11-year span, during the time when sugary drinks and unhealthy drinks were kind of really on the decline, and sales were dropping. So for the first time in 11 years, they add this new marketing campaign, and suddenly sales are finally in the positive state. The marketing campaign, there's a bunch of them that they've tried. This one is really, really effective. Putting names on the product. They put first names on bottles and cans and cases, and people were at shelves looking through all the names that were not theirs, trying to find the name that was theirs. And what's even more interesting is, did you know if your name is Chris, you are more likely to prefer Coke than Pepsi? Because it shares similar letters in your name. Because you have been taught and trained since a very young age that when you see and hear your name or things that sound similar to it, you pay attention. In fact, 5 out of the top 8 selling names in the Coke, Share a Coke brand, campaign, 5 out of the top 8 selling began with either a C or a K, the prominent letters and sound in the Coke brand. Peter didn't show up in the top 50 because he's drinking Pepsi. Now, I'll tell you, this effect has been shown over and over. Scientists have repeated this and they keep thinking, that can't be right. How can a name affect your soft drink preference? And they actually found it's not only true for soft drinks, it's true for careers. If your name is Larry, you're more likely to grow up and become a lawyer. If your name is Dennis, you're more likely to grow up and become a dentist. If you are named Georgia, you are 88% more likely than what relative statistics would indicate that you would now live in the state of Georgia. These are major life decisions being impacted and affected simply by where we are trained to tune our attention and our focus. So I don't know about you, George, but that sounds an awful lot like a deep subconscious influencer and motivator. How about you?
Definitely. And I'm thinking about moving to Georgia now. and you're right. Yeah, I've always liked the name of that state.
You know, we laugh a lot, Joe. We laugh about this. And I'll tell you, before I even did this research, I made these charts and these graphs because we were gonna move. You know, we're gonna pick up the family, we're gonna move because I live in Massachusetts right now, as you can tell by the Boston Red Sox hat. And there's a lot of taxes and income taxes, and there's a lot of cold weather around here. So we're thinking, where can we move? And I put up graphs and charts and I looked at school systems and crime rates. And my wife, she did the same thing. I ended up with Dallas and Nashville as my top 2 picks. And she ended up with either one of the Carolinas. Now, my name is Tim, and Dallas and Nashville are in Texas and Tennessee. Her name is Katie. And when I asked her, well, what did you do for your charts? And she said, well, I just picked the Carolinas because I don't really know. It just feels like home. By the way, she also drives a GMC, Acadia, which her name is Katie. So again, not that these are facts, not that the, you know, one, you know, sample size, right, doesn't indicate, but when scientists do take giant amounts of data and look, there is a significant shift in major life decisions and minor life decisions as is affected by the sound of our own name. So use people's names when you are emailing people. Hi, so-and-so. Tell Frank that your idea is fantastic, but tell Tom that it's terrific. Just use this human brain autumn. It's already there, right? You can use these letters in order to commandeer their brain's attention and draw it to where you think is important and significant.
Tell Frank it's fantastic and Tom that it's terrific. What wonderful insight there. And you're right, the power of the name, and especially in messages. I ignore messages from people who call me, hi there. That's not my name.
I love that. To whom it may concern.
Yeah. It doesn't take much research, you know, to use the name. Yeah. So the name, there's no question, but that's an interesting thing. So look for other words that sound like the person's name, and it's more likely to affect that subconscious level. It's not guaranteed, of course, but it's just making the decision easier for them because now they like you because you're recognizing their name and the sound of their name. What a powerful, that's like magic.
It's like magic, isn't it? I mean, that's really, when you really think about it, it's like real life magic. And that's why I think the subconscious component makes it feel like magic, because it does operate below our conscious awareness. And if we're not aware of it, of how it's working or why it's working, boom, must be magic. Now, again, I think you mentioned something really important. It doesn't happen and it doesn't work every single time. That's why we combine these tactics together. That's why we use as many strategies as possible. That's why we keep coming back and listening to the Your Intended Message podcast to gather as much information, as many strategies as we can that we know are going to help move our intended message forward. So this is a cumulative effect. These things work together and we need to be aware of them. Otherwise, we're being irresponsible communicators and leaving it up to them to figure out what we mean and hoping that they are mind readers or that they're just going to make the best decision for themselves because, you know, it's up to them and it's, you know, they get to make the best. Like, I don't know about you, you know, but I love it when somebody who really has some expertise, you know, offers me some advice and maybe some encouragement about where to go and what to do next. And I don't have to reinvent the wheel, right? So if we have a message that is rooted in, you know, authentic, genuine desire to help other people, then yeah, it's our responsibility to package that message in such a way where it has the highest likelihood of it landing.
Tim, and so the part of the point there is that not one technique by itself will be totally successful. It's a matter of combining them. And let's remind the audience of those seven words. And I'm not, and you said there's seven, and I'm not sure I captured them all. So would you run through that again, please?
I went quick. I sure did. Yes, but if, because, someone's name, help, and thanks. And I closed the book with thanks, because it is the most, in my opinion, the most powerful, the idea of gratitude and expressing gratitude. And that's what these words are all about. It's not just a word on a page. Each one represents a deep psychological human need, right? The word yes is representative of the need for approval. And when you give someone approval or you operate with that yes and mentality that we learned from improv comedy, then absolutely we're going to be touching those. We're going to be turning those dials that people really need to be turned. So human approval, right? The word thanks is such a deep need for gratitude and also to feel appreciated. Now, we get no credit in life when we say thanks to people. What we get credit for is two things: when they feel appreciated and ourselves feeling the gratitude. So it's like a bonus effect, right? So it's not just about the other person. It's not just about us. It's one of those few magic words that really boosts and elevates both parties. In fact, I interviewed a gratitude researcher for the book, Dr. Jeffrey Froh, and he gave us five ways to make sure that a thank you actually lands and five ways so that you know your thanks was heard and that they actually feel appreciated.
And I've noticed that it's one thing to say thanks. However, I think it has a bigger effect if you tell people what you are thanking them for.
Yeah, that's one of the five for sure. So, I mean, the five really quickly are: be timely. It's never too late, but you always want to, you know, sooner is better than later to say thank you. Number two is to compliment the attributes of the benefactor, right? So, hey, thanks so much for last weekend. You are such a good listener. Number three is recognize the intent. Hey, you know what? You were trying to help. Number four is recognize the cost. Hey, you could have been doing anything else last weekend. You came to help me move. And then finally, articulate the benefits. And that's kind of along the lines of what you said, George. Hey, this is what it is. This is what you did for me. And this is why it mattered. This is why it helped, right? So I always encourage organizations, you know, hey, you get those client testimonials and you go and you put them on your website and you advertise with those client testimonials. Show them around, right? Show them around to everybody internally as well. Hey, this is the difference that you helped make. Look at the change you made with your work in this person's life. And that is such a huge, powerful moment. In fact, I spoke at an event one time and I had a speaker and I brought in a speaker with me, and her job was to show and create an experience around gratitude. And she literally went around and interviewed dozens of their clients. She sent out hundreds of messages and received little notes. And she took all those notes and her team hand wrote on these little things, personal messages to individual employees. And there were about 60 employees. And they all stood in a big circle, and about 15 people grabbed this big duffel bag and started passing out little thank you notes. And they all had this envelope. And we just started filling up everybody's envelope and making that personal eye contact connection. This is the difference you made. Boom, boom, boom. And there was just, it was on and on and on it went. Again, there were thousands of messages and everybody was in tears. And that's the power, again, of expressing and receiving gratitude. Receiving and not just brushing it off, but creating that experience in that moment of real, genuine gratitude was something I'll never forget.
Powerful message there. And powerful also reminder that those testimonials that we get from clients aren't just for our marketing, but they're also for building our team and showing the gratitude to our team that our clients have for what they did.
You know, in many times organizations will have like a Slack channel. You know, they have a Slack channel. Just add a Slack channel for client wins. Add a Slack channel and so we can have one place to kind of house all these things so that when anybody's feeling down, just flip through all of the client success stories. And as this is especially true for sales, right? Because what's a more important factor of getting your intended message across as a salesperson than the conviction that you have yourself in the program, product, or service that you're offering? So if you don't have that conviction, it's going to be really, really hard for you to get that. You may intend for them to buy, but your subconscious, your belief system isn't in alignment. You're going to run into a lot of trouble. So if your sales staff is continually reminded over and over of the successes, the wins, the joy, the transformation that your program, product, or service brings to the marketplace, then those salespeople are going to be on fire to show up and produce on a consistent basis. So yeah, I love the idea for sure of documenting and communicating, and regularly so, communicating client wins.
What a powerful idea for keeping your team feeling motivated. And it's funny when you mention that, through my work, through my coaching and my speaking, I've received thank you notes from clients. And over the decades, I've kept every one. And it's been a while, but I remember the last time I went, sat down and started flipping through and say, oh yeah, I remember that person. Oh yeah. And it was a wonderful feeling to be reminded of the help I and how much they appreciated what I did for them. So that's a powerful, So for those mornings when it's tough to get up and get into the grind, just pull up those thank you messages.
Yeah, nothing more motivating than that, than the difference that we're making in other people's lives. And that's a deep driver, again, as well, for human behavior. And you ask anybody, I do this all the time. I always ask people, hey, why are you here? Why do you do what you do? And it's not the paycheck. Like, let's talk. And it always comes back to, well, I really get to develop my skills, or I did this. And I'm like, well, why do you want that? And why do you want that? It always ends up with, I want to help people, right? And that's another magic word, is help. We have an intrinsic desire to help others. So when we demonstrate this is how we're helping, when we show the gratitude that's received, again, this is the most, in my opinion, the most beautiful magic word is thanks, you know, and that ability of a thank you to just motivate, to drive, you know, excitement and enthusiasm, and to pull us from the pits when we're feeling that it's a grind and, you know, is this even worth it? So yeah, document the gratitude that you've received. Don't dismiss, document for sure.
And for people who'd like to know more about your book, Magic Words, The Science and Secrets Behind 7 Words That Motivate, Engage, and Influence, they can find it at the website, goodatpeople.com. And you can find that link in the description below. And what we've offered here in this interview so far is just a glimpse of what you'll get from the book. That's at goodatpeople.com. Tim, as we prepare to wrap up, if you could sit down with a business leader, a team leader, and offer them 1, 2, or 3 pieces of advice of how they might tap into the power of these magic words more consistently with their team, what might be that 1, 2, or 3 pieces of advice?
Yeah, no, I think that's a great question. In fact, a lot of times there is this desire, right, for management, for leadership, to get those quick wins, to get those quick techniques and tactics. I'm reminded of a book by Ken Blanchard called The 1-Minute Manager. And it's just these this idea that this can be done simply and quickly and easily. When in reality, management, leadership, this is a relationship, and it's a very specific kind of relationship. So the one, two, or three pieces of advice that I would have comes back to master the skill of human connection. Language is a big piece of that. See the person in front of you as the human. That's advice number one. Advice number two, be an actual human. Don't try to be the professional boss, right? Don't try to be someone you're not. Fake it till you make it is one of the worst pieces of advice I have ever heard in my entire life. I keep seeing it over and over again. If I could erase one piece of advice from this planet, it would be this idea of fake it till you make it. Listen, there's plenty of fake out there with artificial intelligence looking very real. You don't know right now if I'm a real person or a video that's generated by AI. Fake is everywhere and it's coming in full force, right? So how can we cut through that noise? Well, let's not be fake ourselves, right? Let's actually be a human being. Let's be present with our team and not distracted. Take your cell phones, get them out of sight while you're communicating with these people. Hey, maybe once in a while, jump in a room face to face with them, share some experience. But ultimately, at the end of the day, be curious about what's going on. See them as a human, be a human in response. And of course, keep tuning in to the Your Intended Message podcast. Keep gathering those strategies that you know are going to help you to speak human, right? Speak in such a way that people want to listen. And that is a myriad of strategies. And George, I think I'd be remiss to just pull one or two. But I think the idea of continuous improvement, continuing to focus and prioritize this human connection relationship, and using that circuit of connection, see, be, and speak, and making those not just strategies, but habits.
Terrific advice from Tim. Notice the terrific in the Tim. My guest today is Tim David, reminding you to watch your angles.
If you like what you heard, tell your friends and post your 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, because that helps more listeners find us. Come back every week for more practical insights to help you deliver your intended message. I'm your host, George Torok.